SD Files, the Ultimate Chargers Podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garofolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The big interview.
It's time to talk San Diego Superchargers. We do that with Ernie Martinez. You find him on Twitter at Ernie Martinez SD. He is with Extra 1360, Fox Sports San Diego. And you can always tell somebody that works in radio because their job description is producer, reporter, anchor, graphic designer, janitor, everything else. Ernie, let's start here. This has obviously got to be a frustrating week for San Diego, allowing Kansas City their largest comeback in 56 years. So certainly not just the fact that the game got away, but Ernie, it's got to be really frustrating for the Chargers knowing that it was a divisional game that got away from them, right?
Yes, in so many ways, Nate. You know, first of all, so much talked about putting 4-12 behind them last season. Moving forward, they made the offseason moves. They get Keenan Allen to the 4-year deal extension. The fans couldn't be more happy. And to go into Kansas City guns a-blazing, that first half is something we have not seen in a long time, especially against a divisional team, especially against a team like the Chiefs in Kansas City, a team that they had lost 4 straight games to. And going in, we knew the Chargers had to try to take advantage of the Chiefs, who were banged up. No Jamal Charles, no Justin Houston. Tamba Hali had not even practiced throughout any of the preseason. So with that being said, you know, they did what they had to do, and it just went down so quickly. And I think, you know, earlier today, I think it was best put when Keenan Allen was carted off with which we now know as officially as a torn ACL, will be out the entire season, is that when he was on that cart, the momentum of the team left with him. You couldn't see it, but you could really feel it. And for the Chargers to have a 24-3 lead and then just get outscored 30-3 the rest of the way. Everything this morning on our show, it got to the point where fans, you know, I think Mike McCoy, the Chargers head coach, has been on the fence as far as Charger fans are concerned. But I think this game really put them over the top. And a lot of people said the Chargers need to make a decision on what they're going to do with the head coach moving forward. Now, obviously, he had his pregame or his Monday news press conference already, and he's still a head coach of this team. But I think with the Jaguars coming into town on Sunday, you know, you have to expect the Chargers to go and win, put them at 1-1. And like Philip Rivers said following yesterday's game, and other players also said the same thing, is look, we have 15 more, but to look at what they did in game number one and to lose it the way they did was a huge, they really dropped the ball.
Well, we got a couple of sort of ripple effects from the Keenan Allen injury, Eddie, and let's start with this one. Right or wrong, or based on history, based on this year, is it fair for Mike McCoy to be under fire because of essentially the injury that happened to Keenan Allen? Do you think it's bigger picture than that for fans in terms of his overall performance since he's been the head coach? Sometimes we see coaches get fired and we can sit on the outside and say, well, it might have been somewhat their fault, but not all their fault. Is that the situation here?
Well, I think, too, one of the things that, you know, when you dissect your team every which way you can, you know, whether you win or you're losing, in our case here in San Diego, it's been the lack of victories here under Mike McCoy. He has a losing record, and we're trying to figure out what's his signature game plan. We really haven't seen that in San Diego. His first game as head coach of the Chargers, they went up 21-3 on the Houston Texans. They blew that game. They had a big lead against the Denver Broncos that same year on national TV. They blew that game as well in San Diego. And it seems like that's been the signature. He's gone out and he's had these fast starts to games and early on, and they weren't able to close them out. Now, last year, it was a little bit reversed. They got out to slow starts, yet they weren't, and then they got into a better game plan in the second half, and they either made it close or, you know, they only came away with four wins. So, you know, 4-12 record says it all. So we're trying to figure out what is Mike McCoy's MO, and there really isn't. And the one thing is it doesn't seem like he has a game plan. For instance, yesterday in the Chiefs game, they ran the ball 155 yards. They were 6-7 on third down conversions, and they were giving the ball to Melvin Gordon, something they said that they were going to do this season after the poor rookie season he had. Didn't score a touchdown at all in his rookie season. He missed the last part of the season with a knee injury, went to knee surgery in the offseason, which the Chargers held back at the time. And, you know, there was some concern whether he'd be ready to go for the regular season. We see what he did. He had a fantastic game yesterday, but in the second half, they just didn't seem committed to the run game. And that's part of the situation and the gripe with Mike McCoy is he doesn't stick with what he's been successful at. For some reason, he feels he has to change it up. We hear, of course, that they have so many options with the two tight end set now with rookie Hunter Henry back there and the veteran Antonio Gates and the wide receiving core. But Melvin Gordon was running the ball so well. And, you know, there was a couple of series of plays in the second half where they gave the ball to Melvin Gordon. They gave the ball to Danny Woodhead, an incomplete pass, three out. And it was just like they weren't committed to sticking with the run with Melvin Gordon, something they told us here in San Diego they were doing. Why they didn't do it, we still haven't found out. Now, like I said, it was Melvin Gordon's first game back with the knee surgery, going a little bit harder, scored a couple of touchdowns. Kansas City obviously played him a little differently in the second half. And, you know, maybe there's some soreness in his knee. We don't know. But why the Chargers and Mike McCoy didn't stick with the run plan, as they had said, baffles the San Diego Charger fans.
And, you know, Eddie, we talked about the ripple effects from this, so let's talk about the receiving core. Where do they go from here? You know, we know who's on the roster. He brought up the two tight end sets with Henry and Gates. I would imagine they would want some help that isn't on the roster, but where do they go from here? I know that as of when we're recording this, it's early in the week, but, you know, what are your thoughts on what they wind up doing to try to help this receiving core?
Well, as of right now, they're saying that, you know, the guys behind Keenan Allen have to step up. Travis Benjamin, they went out and they paid money for him to bring him out of Cleveland. He was very excited to play with a guy like Phillip Rivers. Now, after Keenan Allen went down, they never really tested Travis Benjamin. I mean, he's a guy that can stretch the field. That's something they worked on in the offseason, but we didn't see that. Another thing that goes back to Mike McCoy, you have the tools. You might as well just at least try something to see if it works. I mean, it's not like Travis Benjamin is a no-name wide receiver. They brought him in because he can make the big plays. They just didn't do that. Now, Tyrell Williams had a couple of big catches yesterday, so that's a guy that potentially is going to move up and get some more opportunities. Dontrell Inman, another wide receiver. Now, you know, being in this industry, you know, we like to stir the pot a little bit. We like to say things that we'd like to see our teams do here, especially with the Chargers. One of the things that says, you know, if the Chargers are committed, which is by far one of the biggest seasons in the history of this team, they need to win because at stake is the possibility of a new downtown stadium where they can play and the future of this team. So there's so much more in this season and the impact the Chargers will have. Now, so with that being said, it's like maybe you go out and you give up a couple of top-round draft picks down the road to bring in a wide receiver who's out there. One of the names that came to mind that we thought of quickly was Alshon Jeffrey of the Bears. He's a little disgruntled in Chicago right now. Now, whether that happens or not, but it would be if the Chargers were to do something like that, it tells the city of San Diego, hey, look, we lost a big one in Kansas City. We lost our star wide receiver. You know, but we're committed to this team. We're committed to winning this year. So go out and do something. Now, that remains to be seen. And like I said, it's still early. But I know as of right now, they're going to look to Travis Benjamin, Tyrell Williams, and Dontrell Inman And those guys are going to get a lot more opportunities to showcase the goods.
Eddie, when a team's struggling on offense, then Mike McCoy's got to lean on his defense to try to keep these games close so that they have the opportunity in them. They're not playing from behind, things like that. What did you see out of the defense in week one, positive and negative?
Well, and that was just it. The defense looked so good in the first half. And then the second half, they just seemed to fall apart. And, that's little people, a lot of Charger fans, and myself too. We cover this team. We have a lot invested in this team, and you see what happens good and bad from year to year. Now, for the last couple of years, John Pagano's job has been rumored, like he's on the block to get let go, but he always seems to rally, and the defense seems to rally around him, and they finish strong. And yesterday, they started off strong. They were able to get three sacks on Alex Smith. They were pressuring him throughout the game. They had Arrowhead Stadium. It's quiet as I've heard in a long time. They had control of the crowd, and partially because of the defense that they were able to do. Kansas City obviously countered that with some second, some halftime changes, but to still be up 24-3 and not be able to protect that lead, and the Chargers offense faltering at the same time. But as a defense, Manti Te'o looked so good in the first half. He's become a leader on that team. It just didn't seem he was a leader yesterday for the Chargers. And Denzel Perryman, who came on strong, the rookie last year, the linebacker came on strong last year. He starts the season. There's a lot of expectations for him. And just too many missed tackles. Denzel Perryman, a couple of key missed tackles. But in the second half, this defense was just what we saw too much of last year, and it was missed tackles on defense. So, Mike McCoy talks about putting a full four quarters together for victory, and this team seems to get about 2-3, and then they just can't complete that fourth quarter and come away with wins. And, the defense – if you had to give them a grade, I'd give them a D+, C-. They just weren't able to pull it together last night or yesterday to preserve that win.
Great stuff. Ernie Martinez from Extra Sports 1360, Fox Sports San Diego. Great coverage of the Chargers. I know we'll be visiting with you again as we go throughout the season. Make sure you're following Ernie on Twitter at Ernie Martinez SD. Ernie, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it.
Nate, anytime. I appreciate it.
Stick around. The coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. And as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. Let's go back to Jeff's history. When they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s, he didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had two losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem, because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, maybe you can play that formula where he was only 17-35, but he had two interceptions. If you're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula, you got to run the ball and can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know, because the Rams offense was basically so inept. And so, yeah, we're going to have to see how it pans out. it's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks, notwithstanding even the offensive side. Obviously, what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good. But we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they indeed go on the road? And it's a tall task because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people, looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if they can stay healthy. And that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown. That offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. You know, yeah, Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams, let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good, physical, you know, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, you know, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team. But they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense. But I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They too, okay? Now you got to follow up with it because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show Game Day First for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man, we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. For them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a plus tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slot. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think it's going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did or 45 times like Dak Prescott, But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they look like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas. Although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. So, you had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division, but certainly that bodes well for Kansas City, if nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points, a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints, at home in that dome, you can, you know, check off pretty much the entire league. You know, this guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it on two-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, a resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. And his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints defense continues. They're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know once again they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing talk about, you typically, particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a two-point play. Or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans on the road that late in the game against that crowd and, oh, by the way, against a Hall of Famer like Drew Brees? I kind of like my odds with the two-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hands.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy. And you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home. So maybe the situation, you know, bared out for that one and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson. And everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person. So that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that and you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson. So how is that possible? Well, you saw on display. Now, that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. Maybe one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if this is going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false, the Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake here.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins, just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it. I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. There's going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday, even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD. Just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys, get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time, I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nate.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.